Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell here with a review of the WWE Raw show that aired on August 13th, 2012. The show is live from Dallas, Texas at American Airlines Center. Before we get into running through the show, just want to give you a quick heads up that it's a great time to sign up for a .net membership with SummerSlam approaching this weekend. SummerSlam week, I'm sure it'll be busy. Not WrestleMania crazy, I'm not going to lie to you about that or anything, but it is going to be a big weekend in pro wrestling with Brock Lesnar facing Triple H in the main event, and of course the triple threat for the WWE Championship. We don't know what the hell the World Heavyweight Championship match is for SummerSlam just yet, but it is WWE's biggest show of the summer, and we will have you covered. If you are interested in membership, here's a few perks for you. You will get the .net member exclusive audio show. We do, the ones we do here on the All Access side, it's not, this isn't the only audio we do, trust me. We do at least 5 hours. I think I'm really underestimating, just to be on the safe side, of new audio content each week, including the .NET Weekly audio show, which is anywhere from 90 minutes to over 2 hours in length. That's Chris Shore and I analyzing all the news of the week, oftentimes including first-run news items that haven't been reported elsewhere during the show. My Q&A audio show on Fridays or Mondays, just depending on my schedule for the week. Chris Shore is back doing some Q&A stuff. He's working. He did one while I was away on vacation. Looks like he's going to do another one this week, but Shore's doing some audio. Of course, you guys hear Chris along with Jake Barnett for the WWE SmackDown audio review on Saturday. That is a weekly all-access staple. Will Pruitt does weekly reviews of the TNA Impact Wrestling show. Sometimes they're all-access, sometimes they're not. Will and Jake, they team up for the .NET Countdown show on Wednesdays and run through the top best and worst moments, I guess, of the last week. I think it's top five best and the worst three moments of each and every week. Those are just the staples of the .NET Weekly on the audio side of things. We also have interviews with Chris Jericho, Dutch Mantel, Court Bauer, former WCW wrestler Conan, Dawn Marie at one point. Don't know what to say about that one right now. Brock Lesnar, Jim Sinister, Minister Mitchell, Sean X-Pac Waltman joined us for an audio review of Raw at one point, and also some current interviews include Violent J of Insane Clown Posse discussing the Bloody Mania event that just took place as part of the Gathering of the Juggalos. Shane Hurricane Helms, also Just Incredible, Gabe Sapolsky, Court Bauer. I think I did mention him, but he has been a frequent guest, a former WWE creative team member. Also, Chris DeJoseph, a.k.a. Big Dick Johnson, and Chris Roche, a couple of former WWE creative team members who have joined me on the audio side of things. So plenty going on the audio side as far as the member side is concerned. And also, you have access to the .NET Members Forum, where you can correspond with other members about SummerSlam or anything else you want to. We have a really good group of people in there. A lot of people who have just maybe have had rough experiences on other message boards, not necessarily just in wrestling, but just in general. And they really positive things to say about the group that's in the forum on a regular basis. Also, you can write your own blog and have it read by and commented on by other ProWrestling.net members. And it is an ad-free version of the website over on the member side of things. With SummerSlam coming up, again, great time to sign up. Rates start at $5.50 a month if you want to lock yourself in for a full year. You just want to try it out for a month, maybe just get through SummerSlam and see if it's for you, or hell, that's all you want. You just want to lock yourself in for ad-free access and get that SummerSlam audio review on Sunday night. That's cool. You can do that too. $5.50 a month for the annual option, but if you want to just try that out for a month, it is $7.50. If you're interested, if you're listening on iTunes, just head on over to ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up area right there on the main page, and you will have almost instant access to all of those things that I just discussed. Having said all that, one other plug to get out of the way. Today at 4:30 Central, as I do just about every single Tuesday, I am on the PW Torch livecast with Wade Keller of PWTorch.com, and it is a one-hour free audio show, a little bit of a bonus show for people, and then we also do some extra bonus time for the respective members of our sites, and we take phone calls during the show, so if you have a question you would like to have Wade, and or I answer, you are more than welcome to call in over at blogtalkradio.com. Again, it's every Tuesday at 4:30 Central. I am on the show. It's actually a week, every day throughout the week there's a show, 4:30 Central on Mondays. Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant have an early start, or a later start, I should say, leading into the WWE Raw show, the hour leading up to it, so 6 Central. But on Tuesdays, it's 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern. Again, blogtalkradio.com. Wow. All right. Now that we've got all the plugs out of the way, let's get into Monday's Raw show. This was the go-home show for SummerSlam, and I thought they did a pretty good job. You know, I mean, I've been kind of down on the hype, or the build, I should say, for SummerSlam, especially Triple H and Brock Lesnar. It kind of, I like some of the mic work we've seen, especially from Triple H and Paul Heyman. They got a little sidetracked with Stephanie McMahon and getting her revenge on Paul Heyman at one point and at Raw 1000. And with Brock's limited dates, I think it's just been hard for WWE to keep him feeling as relevant as he should. It should feel like a major happening that Brock Lesnar is about to have his second match since leaving UFC. And it does and it doesn't. But it feels more important tonight after Raw than it did going into the show. So that's a plus. The angle that they did with Shawn Michaels was that Brock was teasing that one way or another he was going to get his hands on Shawn. Well, I shouldn't say. He just said, I'll see you again. I'll see you before SummerSlam. And so Shawn was nervous backstage all night. He ran into Brock at one point, who just stared him down. And when Shawn left in a panic, Brock just sat there and kind of flashed a evil smile, knowing that he was in Shawn's head. And they did a bit after a contract signing where Paul Heyman and Shawn Michaels were involved in an automobile accident backstage. And that's when Brock showed up, grabbed Shawn Michaels, dragged him to the ring, and broke his arm as Triple H was there to watch. The car part of it, super cheesy. It really was. That was pretty cornball stuff. They didn't show you the accident. They didn't go, you know, spend the money to do any kind of stunts or anything like that. I don't know how much better it would have made it. It just was kind of cheesy anyway. And then the part with Brock pulling Shawn out of the car and conveniently bumping into the camera, giving us just a black screen at that point. I was like, oh, really? So all you could hear was a little, you know, some commotion. But at least they did, you know, follow up. I was worried, like, oh, God, tell me that's not it. It's just we're supposed to be left wondering what happened to Shawn. No, and Brock brought him to the ring, and that's when he was locked him in the Kimura, and Paul Heyman was out there to tell Triple H, who ran out, take another step, and he'll break his arm. And, Hunter thought about it. Eventually, Brock just broke it anyway, and then hightailed it out of there with Heyman, who was pretty damn good, yelling, you broke his arm. You really broke his arm. Doing a good job. I like that touch that Paul Heyman added right there, because it shows that even he's surprised by, you know, what Brock will do. And it shows that Heyman's not in control of this guy. You know, that's kind of a change from the last time around, I think. Not the entire run they had together, but Heyman seemed like he was a little more in control of things at different points in their run together when both were WWE regulars. Whereas this time, it's just like Heyman's really out to show that this guy's unstable. You don't know what the hell he's going to do next. He can't control him. And he's been consistent with that. Like, there was one point during the contract signing, too, where he's like, it's just a contract signing. He's yelling at him. And then another point in the buildup, when Brock was going, right as Brock took the mic, I think it was last week, when he delivered the line to Shawn, as Brock takes the mic, there's Heyman just sweating it out, showing like, oh, God, what's he going to say, basically? You know, without saying a word, those were the expressions that Heyman was able to convey. Heyman's added a lot to this. That was a key thing that was missing when Brock showed up for the feud with John Cena, with Paul Heyman there, to just verbalize. You know, Brock is he can cut a good sit-down UFC-style promo, and I can't believe we haven't seen more of those from Brock since then. It just seems like a no-brainer to me that WWE would give us more of those. But Heyman is able to he's so much better than Brock, and, I mean, really damn near everyone when it comes to just being just a great heel. I mean, he's so good on the mic right now. Doing some of the best work of his career, if not the best work of his career, as a mouthpiece. And but let's work our way through the show with the, you know, this isn't news to anybody on the member side of things, but if you for those on the All Access side, With the change in, you know, with the expansion to 3 hours, we'd be here all day if I ran through everything. So I'm going to kind of, I'm still going to touch on what happened during the show, but a little more, you know, here's what happened briefly with some commentary. So, you know, I mean, I'm just going to assume that most of you saw the show. Of course, if you didn't, head on over to ProWrestling.net. You can check out my my live coverage review of the go-home edition of SummerSlam right there in the WWE TV report section and follow along. That's what I'm using as an outline. So if you want to, go right ahead. The opening match, this is something they hyped online, I guess, was that CM Punk would fight Big Show in the opening match. It was a non-title match, and it was an apparent no contest. Maybe Punk won by DQ. I guess, I don't know, Daniel Bryan ended up running out and attacking CM Punk for that disqualification. He put Punk in the no lock, Show drops an elbow on Punk, and then John Cena runs out and clears both Show and Bryan from the ring. Punk wasn't pleased by this and ended up staring at Cena while he was doing a good job of selling the no lock. Then AJ skips out. She's still skipping. I don't know. I mean, she's not acting like she's as unstable as she was. And she's dressed differently. I don't know, I might have her be a little more professional for the time being, at least. Just a little thing. Not one of my big complaints about the show by any means. But she said that Bryan is still clearly dealing with his anger management issues. So there's that anger management. It seems like they're still mentioning it for Charlie Sheen purposes. But they haven't actually mentioned Charlie Sheen. I thought they might. I did address that in a member-exclusive audio show today. It's called Quick Hits that I'm doing, something to kind of fill the gap between the .NET Weekly audio show. So if there's some news that I think needs to be touched on in audio that really can't wait for Thursday, I'm just chiming in, jumping in solo. It could be anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. I think it was 30 minutes in length today. Charlie Sheen was one of the issues that I discussed there on the member side of things. But no mention of Chuck Sheen that I caught tonight during the show. So I assume he's still going to be there, but you know, because of the past angle. But I can't even say for sure anymore because of the lack of hype for this guy. AJ just announced that it was going to be a Big Show teaming with Daniel Bryan against Punk and Cena, that oddball tag team bit that WWE loves to do with guys that, you know, when with the top babyface and the guy who's on the verge of turning on him, essentially. We've seen it a million times, but it's usually effective. And from there, I mean, a lot of hype for Lesnar and Hunter's contract signing throughout the show. We got JTG bitching backstage to Caitlin that the show is 3 hours long and he still can't get a match on Raw. He said, this is crazy. And that's when AJ showed up, and she takes offense because she thought that maybe that meant JTG didn't think she was doing a good job as the guest or the general manager. And she said that she'll find him an opponent. JTG, of course, is happy about this, and I think he's the only person in the world oblivious. I didn't know if it was going to be Ryback or Kane or, you know, who was going to kick the crap out of JTG. I just figured it would be one of those two guys, maybe even a Randy Orton, who knows. But sure enough, it was Ryback. I think probably everyone's first guess, who beat JTG in 155. And this was just the usual Ryback squash-type match. And I don't know what to, you know, it was odd that JTG's comments last week came during Raw. They alluded to him on the show, they mentioned him outright on the show. So I'm not quite sure, is this something that started as JTG being pissed that cooler heads have prevailed and they're just going to, you know, play it up as a storyline, if only for one night? Are they punishing him? I'm not quite sure what it is. I can't say I'm all that compelled. I wish they'd kind of try to do a little more, so, you know, repackage JTG. He has himself, looks-wise, he's not wearing the Crime Time gear anymore. I think there's a little something they could do with the guy, but I think there's a little something they could do with a lot of these guys in WWE on the undercard that just really are wasting away, unfortunately for them. You know, the heroes of WWE superstars, as I like to call them. There was a poll to see who would be on Piper's Pit. Your options were Chris Jericho, The Miz, and Dolph Ziggler, and usually just have to assume that the babyface is going to win. I thought maybe there's just a small chance that the fans would want to see Piper put one of the heels in their place, but I assumed it would be Jericho, and sure enough, it turned out to be Jericho. Our free preview match is Santino Marella facing Antonio Cesaro for the U.S. title in the YouTube show leading up to SummerSlam. Antonio has a couple of non-title wins over Santino, Why they had him lose to Christian on SmackDown last week, I will never know. I mean, you'd think that they would have, it looked like they had some idea they were going to go with the U.S. title match. Maybe the, I mean, I'm hoping it's as simple as, well, they're going to feud because Antonio and Christian had a pretty good match on SmackDown. And so maybe the idea is that, well, we'll show Christian can beat him going into the show. Antonio wins, and then Christian becomes his top challenger, and we just get Santino away from the U.S. title because, well, frankly, he doesn't need it. And he's a comedy guy, and he's fine in his comedy role, but he really doesn't need to be anywhere near the U.S. title, in my opinion, at least. Then we got Roddy Piper rambling backstage about how everyone is picking, and he doesn't even know who his guest is going to be, and he turns his attention to Shawn Michaels, who is just, his mind is elsewhere, thinking about Brock, of course. And Michaels got a phone call from Triple H, and he said it's not his fight, and Hunter needs to be there now. So Shawn was just very rattled, was the idea, by what Brock had told him the week before. And I'm thinking, well, then why did you show up? You could have just stayed home. Did Hunter really need you there for moral support for the contract signing? Was he worried about being jumped 2-on-1 by Paul Heyman? I'm not quite sure. But anyway, we got our third match. It was R-Truth beating Heath Slater in 135. The one-man band needs at least, like, a backup vocalist or a drummer. Somebody who can help this man win a match because it's not happening. But I'm happy to see that he's still getting time on Raw and just a little bit of Mike Dunn, if nothing else, despite the fact that his run with the Legends is now complete. I get a kick out of Heath Slater, I have to admit. The primetime players hit the ring. I missed it. I tend to unintentionally zone out Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler at times, and really all wrestling announcers, unless they have something to offer. And lately, we haven't heard much from announcers that really have something to offer. So I tend to tune them out. But I did pick up after the fact that they had said that Kofi wasn't going to be there for some reason. So Truth was vulnerable, and the primetime players took advantage of that. Of course, if you're wondering, they did not mention AW, his dismissal, or anything. It was as if AW never existed. It was just the primetime players, and they continue to do their dance. And I don't even know if they mentioned the millions of dollars thing that they like to do, but they were still doing their little back-and-forth dance that they do. So the match is on at SummerSlam. We're getting the primetime players challenging Kofi Kingston and R-Truth for the WWE tag titles. Our first Mark Henry sighting in a while. We get footage of him at the Olympics in London, and they also showed a tout that he did in London. And he was kind of happy-go-lucky, and I guess that was I don't know what they're doing with Mark Henry. Didn't look like his return is imminent or anything like that. And then the announcers were nice enough to kiss some NBC Universal ass. But what a wonderful job they did covering the Olympics, and okay, great. I'm sure NBCU is proud, but I don't think your contract with NBCU is coming up anytime soon. You'll be okay. And then we got Michael Cole. The announcers, they didn't get into, I mean, just the idea that big-time DJ Paulie D from the Jersey Shore was the social media ambassador. Now, that may turn your stomach, but they didn't, make it worse by just, you know, shoving it down your throat all night. I don't think we ever even heard from him by Skype as we did Charlie Sheen. Maybe that awful feed they had for Skype has soured them on that idea forever. And hey, if nothing else, if you're like, God, I don't want to see the social media ambassador crap, well, you're not alone, but it sure beats the hell out of seeing these same people show up and serve as the guest host of the show, doesn't it? Then we got an explanation or a video that kind of explained what the hell happened on SmackDown with Del Rio and Sheamus that cost Del Rio his title match. We got a tout from Del Rio who said that no manager is bigger than he is, and he intends to talk to Booker, the general manager, at Friday SmackDown, which, of course, will be taped on Tuesday in Austin. If anyone out there is going to that show, we could certainly use a correspondent. You can hit me up at dotnetjason@gmail.com. That's dotnetjason@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear from you and get your help for hopefully providing some live updates on that show that will be taped on Tuesday, again, in Austin, Texas. Then we got Sin Cara making his entrance in a commercial. Afterward, it was Sin Cara beating Tensai in 220. I have never cheered louder, harder, whatever you want to say for Sin Cara to win a match, because that meant that Sakamoto would get the shit knocked out of him. And I really do take great pride and enjoyment, just all out satisfaction, damn near ecstasy when I see Tensai beating the holy hell out of Sakamoto. I know it's wrong. It makes me a bad person, but I'm loving this. This is the greatest thing they've ever done with Tensai. Sooner or later, that just no good, ungrateful Sakamoto is going to revolt. You just know he is. He's going to rebel against Tensai. And for that, to that, I say shame on you, Sakamoto. You know your role. You do. This is your job. Your job is to just get your ass handed to you by Tensai when he loses his matches. He needs a bitch. You are his bitch. Do your job. Don't strike back. Don't ever. Just keep. I'm hoping Tensai goes on like the world's greatest losing streak, and because that would mean Sakamoto is going to get just destroyed week in and week out. And they can keep him strong like they did recently by having, you know, showing that he could have beat someone. Oh, but he took it too far because he's an angry, angry man. And the referee had to jump in and, oh, reverse decision. That means Sakamoto gets his. Whatever it takes. I don't even care. Somehow, some way, even if he wins, I want to see Sakamoto get his ass handed to him. I can't help myself. Backstage, we got Shawn Michaels telling a crew member, let me know if you see him, but don't tell him I'm looking for him. Speaking of bitches, Shawn was really, they really made him look, cowardly, I guess is the best way to put it when it comes to Brock. I mean, I don't know how much harm there is in doing that. Shawn's not an active wrestler, and, you know, unless the plan is for Shawn to have to overcome his fear and face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, which I guess you can't entirely rule out, I don't think it will happen. But, I mean, I don't see too much harm. I had some fun mocking just the way that, you know, badass Shawn Michaels had turned into cowering father Shawn Michaels on the Raw show. But, I don't think they're doing major damage to Shawn Michaels. They're certainly not affecting his legacy. And if he's not going to wrestle and they just don't feel like there's any reason to, that they need to keep him as, cocky and sure of himself, Shawn Michaels, then this works for this. I mean, hopefully he'll kind of get a little bit of his mojo back, even if he is just going to be a part-time player for WWE. But for this angle, it's working. Then Roddy Piper was shown walking backstage, and it was time after a commercial break for the Piper's Pit segment. Chris Jericho was the most excited person about this segment. I don't blame him. I mean, he grew up watching Roddy Piper and said this was his first time appearing on Piper's Pit. He was tweeting about it. He was downright giddy about this. And, you know, I grew up watching Piper's Pit, too. Would have been a cool moment. Even cooler if they had the actual set. And Ace Cowboy Bob Orton was standing back there with that cast on his hand. But, you know, if you're Jericho, you'll take what you can get. Unfortunately, he didn't get the good Roddy Piper. You know, there's good Roddy Piper who sometimes can really surprise you by being engaged and just like, wow, he still got it. And then there's this Roddy Piper who's not paying – he doesn't know the guys, what they're doing. He's not paying attention to WWE television. Either no one brought him up to speed on, you know, the guys he was in there with, or he forgot. I mean, I don't know, but this was not good Roddy Piper, and this was kind of a train wreck. I got a kick out of Dolph putting him in his place at one point because Piper kept talking, and Dolph's just like, Roddy, this isn't about you. I thought that was great. Jericho, and then telling Jericho to pay close attention to this deranged individual because this is where you are heading. Just really good stuff from Dolph. I mean, it wasn't enough to save it because you still had the fans chanting what at Dolph? Like, really? You don't even know an excellent, awesome put down when you hear one. You're too busy chanting Steve Austin's catchphrase from the early 2000s. Can we move on from this stupid phenomenon? But Jericho said he didn't want to hear what Ziggler said because he was busy staring at the bowl of spaghetti on his head. I'm like, really? After that good put down, we get that from Jericho too? Like, between the fans and Jericho's bad joke, it was like, you guys just kind of this should have been a moment for Dolph for putting Roddy in his place, and everybody kind of erased it. But long story short on this, Miz came out, was saying that he didn't have much in common with Ziggler, but they can at least both still win the big one. And he said he was taking over the show. Ziggler could stay. Piper and Jericho had to get the hell out of his ring. Jericho ended up clearing both heels from the ring as Roddy cheered him on, and they went to a commercial break. And, it's just, unfortunately, bad Roddy Piper. And, he was bringing up his WrestleMania angle with Jericho. The turn has been so awkward, Chris Jericho's, that is, that, I mean, there hasn't been that come to Jesus moment where Jericho kind of sits down and goes through the things he's done and is apologetic for it. And there really hasn't been that moment. So I can't even say that it's entirely Piper's fault, but I mean, watching this, it felt like Piper, he made reference to how the fans started cheering for Jericho just as they were cheering for him when, even though he was like fighting Mr. T and all that, and basically he was a heel and Jericho was a heel. And he can see that the fans were cheering both of them. Almost like Jericho hadn't turned yet, but Jericho had just said Y2J is back, baby, on Friday SmackDown. So, maybe it's just what happens on SmackDown stays on SmackDown in WWE's mind. Again, at that part, I don't know that you can really point the finger at Roddy because it just has been such a just odd turn. I think they're there now. The fans know he's a babyface. But it's just, man, I miss the days when WWE would really do a good job with their heel and babyface turns, and they're not. Jericho's no exception right now. But this did lead to the match of the night. It was a damn good triple threat match. This is about as good of a match as you will see on free television. This easily could have been a pay-per-view match. Not a main event or anything like that. I'm okay with this level of match being given away in long form. I think it was about 14 minutes on Raw, free television, if you will. Basic cable television, if you, whatever you want to call it. I get down on them when they do what they did last week, which is giving away big matches that could be at least television main events, if not, highly slotted pay-per-view main events or matches. This one, yeah, I mean, like I say, with Miz having the IC title, this easily could have been a match on the SummerSlam card, but I don't think they're giving away something that people would have looked at as, oh, that's a big reason why I'm ordering this show. Maybe some would have, but not the masses. So this worked. And it was Dolph beating Jericho and The Miz in a non-title triple threat in 14 minutes. I do have to complain again. The Miz lost, I think it was last week on Raw, to Kane. And then he got beat, I think it was on SmackDown, by Rey Mysterio. And in this match, he didn't lose. He wasn't the one who took the pin. But they did show that he was tapping out to Chris Jericho's Lion Tamer. Or was it, I guess, Walls of Jericho it was. It wasn't, Raw 1000, he wins the title, and you're like, hey, Miz, they're actually going to reboot this guy and try to give him a shred of dignity and credibility again. And then he just starts losing again. And he's kind of, he still has a title, but it's not like he means more than before he won it, really, just the way he's being booked. But this, I don't want to spend too much time whining about that because this was a damn good match. I really, good near falls across the board. Except, all three guys had moments where it looked like they were going to win, and then they followed up with something where it looked like the other guy was going to win. It just was good rapid fire, good, great near falls, and just a damn good television match. I enjoyed the hell out of that, and just very well done. The right guy went over in Ziggler because they're trying to tell the story that Jericho can't win the big one, and what happens, you don't want him to win going in to say, see, I told you I could. No, you kind of want to keep that out there. And you want to give Jericho a bit of a revenge factor going into the pay-per-view match with Dolph Ziggler on Sunday. And from there, we went backstage with CM Punk. Eve showed up to stir the pot a little bit, talking about, congratulating him on the new CM Punk. And he's saying that there is no new CM Punk. He's not wearing a black hat or twirling his mustache and basically saying, I'm not a heel. He said that he's the same guy he's always been. And she said that she doesn't think anyone really believes that, especially John Cena. So Punk says, I'll go tell him myself. So Eve is, she continued, she also had that moment where she was the one telling Punk that he's being overshadowed by different people. Few weeks back, at least, Big Show made similar comments, but Eve also had a backstage segment where she told Punk the same thing. So I don't know, how much we should read into Eve as far as her potentially being part of a Punk act or anything like that, but few stir in the pot. Then we went, well, we got a little more Paulie D talk. He's going to be the DJ for the SummerSlam party. Don't worry, this is like the night before thing that unless you're in Los Angeles, you won't be exposed to. Then we, then it was time for Shawn Michaels, being scared by John Cena. He was, walking, you know, doing something backstage when Shawn walked up and, hey, welcome home, patting him on the back, and Shawn jumped like, oh shit, is that Brock? Nope. Cena asked if, Shawn was, okay, and, he said he was and walked away, and then Cena turned around and saw Punk standing there, and Cena asked whether he should follow Punk's lead or expect to be stabbed in the back. And Punk took exception to Cena calling him that guy because he'd assumed it meant that he stabs people in the backs and takes shortcuts. He doesn't do that, and he's not a phony. So we're going to tell him that he wanted to face Cena and show in a triple threat match, and he's going to do everything in his power to make sure that they won't leave as WWE champion, but he won't stab anyone in the back to get there. Basically, he says at the end of the night, come hell or high water, I'm going to make sure that it's all about me. So, another kind of tweener promo. You know, if you want to like Punk, you can like some of what he said and believe what he's saying. And if you don't want to like Punk, like, wow, all about him. What an egomaniac, and I don't believe him. I just don't think they've done a very good job of making the title important in this triple threat. It's about Punk's heel turn. It's not about John Cena wanting to, you know, desperately get back the WWE Championship. It's not about Big Show wanting the championship. I mean, they kind of allude to it here and there, but it's not enough. And it's more of a personality-driven triple threat match than anything. And for that reason, I mean, I don't think you see a title change on Sunday. You'd think they'd spend a lot more time building up to that with Cena especially delivering that big promo going into the show about how important that belt is to him. And Cena's, for the most part, if Cena doesn't talk about winning a title, he's not winning a title. But if he is, then you'll get that preacher man John Cena promo, and next thing you know, he's got gold around his waist. We got a new Wade Barrett vignette. He talked about coming from the world of Fight or Die. And he said it was like breathing in that if you stop, you die. And he was lured away to a world of lies and illusions. And he said it's a world where life was easy and civilized. And he said he couldn't live the lie because he couldn't sustain the truth. Life is pain. And it should have ended there, but instead we had to get, I'm Wade Barrett and my barrage has just begun. Enough with the barrage stuff. Just come on, move on. If it was like just me who was irked by that, then I'd be like, yeah, it's just me. I mean, I can shut up and move on with my life. But I hear from just about everyone, like, God, I hate that barrage thing. The Barrett barrage is stupid. I don't get people defending it going, I think it's good. And there might be people who don't care, but I don't hear anyone going, no, that's great. it's bad. I don't like it. But I like the Barrett vignettes, the look of him, the style and all that. Some of what he said, it's like he was lured away to a world of lies and illusions. Is that WWE? And if so, then why are you back? I guess would be my first question, but I'm not going to harp too much on it because we don't, we really don't know where this is heading. Six match, Layla and Caitlin beat Eve and Beth Phoenix in 4:15. It was Caitlin pinning Beth Phoenix, and Michael Cole talked about it as an upset. It's not an upset when Beth Phoenix loses almost every match she has on television now. It's just not. Beth, I can recall more Beth Phoenix losses lately than anyone. Maybe the other ones just don't matter to me, but damn, every time it seems like she's in there, especially in a single setting now, she's, oh, what an upset. It's not. She's not the dominant diva. They've gone out of the above and beyond, basically, to destroy that image of her, and she just keeps losing. Oh, to Caitlin? Caitlin? Really? I know her and AJ have some history together that they kind of played on again. They had the two of them talking at one point. I may have glossed over. Maybe I'll still get to it. It wasn't all that important anyway. Caitlin, I guess the reason she won here is because she's going to face Eve on Friday SmackDown. And the winner gets to become Booker T's assistant. I don't know how or why Caitlin is qualified for this. At least Eve, she wasn't really qualified to be on with Big Johnny, I don't think, but she got the job. And at least she has the experience. Caitlin is just like, why? I I don't see anything in Caitlin. I've got to be completely honest with you. Then we went to a shot of the parking garage. Lawler said Hunter had yet to arrive, but he would be there for the contract signing. All right. And then we get the graphic. We got main event ring entrances with, a little under an hour left in the show, I think, is it was right at the top of the third hour. I'm like, wow, main event now? It was your seventh match of the night. It was CM Punk and John Cena beating Daniel Bryan and Big Show in 13:20. This was fun. This was I liked down the stretch when, I mean, they told good stories. Daniel Bryan just being the little raging lunatic that he is and getting into yes and no bickering with Big Show when Big Show wanted a tag into the match or wanted to start the match. I don't even recall what it was. But this led to a big yes and no back and forth. And so they had issues. And, of course, you have Cena and Punk having their issues. Punk kind of rolling his eyes at Cena's antics. And Punk at one point going for a tag. And Cena, who had taken all this punishment and was selling on the floor, Punk was pissed that even though he had just tagged himself into the match, Cena wasn't there to take the tag, like probably less than 30 seconds later. And it was fun stuff. And then what I really liked was they had a little back and forth with Punk doing the You Can't See Me bit on Daniel Bryan and the five-knuckle shuffle routine, and then Cena coming right back and doing the high knee and a bulldog, taking some moves out of Punk's playbook, and then Punk getting pissed about this and grabbing his title belt and just going and standing at ringside. And Daniel Bryan tried to roll up Cena at that point, who was distracted by Punk, but he was unsuccessful. Cena ended up hitting the attitude adjustment on Bryan as Big Show watched from the floor too. And so Cena got the win for his team. So both Punk and Big Show watching from the floor at that point. John Cena goes over. And then after the match, Big Show gets in the ring and goes to hit John Cena with the WWE champ, with the, was it a title belt? I think it was. Yeah, he was going to hit him with a belt shot. But that's when CM Punk ran in. And Big Show was going to attack Cena from behind is what it was. And Punk ended up running in and hitting Big Show with the belt shot. That's why I was confused. I'm like, why did Big Show have the title belt? But it was actually Punk who did and clocked Big Show with it. And then it was Punk and Cena having a stare down. Punk then approaching John Cena and offering him a handshake. But John Cena didn't reciprocate. And Punk got upset and said, come on, you know, and said something else, but camera pulled away for God knows what reason. And then Punk dropped his hand and left the ring, and Cena just kind of stood there like, is this happening? What the hell? We had Josh, the Stalker Matthews, backstage, just popping up out of nowhere. That's why if you read my reports, you're like, who's the Stalker? Why is he the Stalker? Watch him. Not every time he does an interview, but so many times, like, someone will just be walking backstage, and boom, there's Josh Matthews, out of nowhere. And just, like, he's hiding behind a shrub. I don't know if he works for TMZ or what he does, but he's always hiding back somewhere backstage, and he just emerges and sticks a microphone in somebody's face. And this was no exception. And he was talking with Punk, who said that Cena went into business for himself. And the internet fans out there were going, oh, my God, he's using insider lingo. This is great. But Punk saved it by saying that because there's really no need to. But, you know, if you're going to, do what he did and make it mean something that the television audience can understand. He said Cena cared more about himself and not whether they won or lost the match. So nice little touch there by Punk. And he said that Cena showed him the ultimate disrespect by not shaking his hand. So he intends to teach him and everyone else a lesson in respect on Sunday. And they went to a commercial. Nicely done. And then it was our other main event. I don't know. The tag match was listed as the main event. But instead we got our first glimpse of Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman talking backstage of the night. And then it was eighth match of the night, Damian Sandow beating Christian in 2:10. A nice win for Christian. Or for Damian, I'm sorry. I really thought that, especially when Brodus Clay came out early on, I'm like, oh, here we go. Brodus distracts Sandow. Christian gets his win. And didn't happen that way. Instead, Brodus came out. Christian, they did the obvious. Christian rolls up Sandow. Sandow actually kicks out and then performs his finisher on Christian and gets the pin while Clay was watching. It was like, wow, cool. I don't think they ever advertised this officially for SummerSlam, though. We'll see if maybe they have on the website, but I don't think they actually announced it during the show You would think with the build-up that it was, I thought it might actually be the free preview match or something. Maybe they're just going to do an angle with them. I'm not sure. But at this point, at last check, the match had not been added to the SummerSlam lineup. It was one of those things where I don't think Christian loses that much. He just got a win over Antonio Cesaro on Friday. And Sandow, I think this is a credibility-building victory for him. I like that. I just hope it doesn't turn into him being squashed by Brodus Clay so that this win over Christian is quickly forgotten. I'd like Damian Sandow. I have high hopes for both guys. I just think Sandow is much more polished and ready to do something than Clay is. Where Clay, I think they're still, I don't think they know how to present him. They're so caught up in, not lately, but, you know, it's still the dance number and all that. Clay was at his best when he was in there, you know, with a serious tone, talking about Big Show. That was good Brodus Clay. I want to see more of that Brodus Clay, and I think we will during this program with Sandow. So it could be fun. I just hope that both guys can get something out of this, and it's not just even Steven booking that both guys are just kind of stalled out. Then we got Paranoid Sean backstage looking around a corner. When he turned around, there was Brock. And Sean uncomfortably walked away, and that's when Brock just smiled as after Sean had left, knowing that he, you know, he'd gotten into Sean's head. And the contract signing was supposed to be up next, but Triple H still hadn't arrived. So Jerry Lawler's a goddamn liar. He said that he'd be there. All right, he was proven right in the long run. But, no Triple H at this point. Not sure what they were going for with that. I guess they just had to set up why Sean would go out there first, but I don't know that all that was necessary. I really don't. We got, after the commercial break, then we got Brock and Paul Heyman coming out. And Heyman really good on the mic talking about his client, believes the story that Triple H's flight was delayed because he knows that Triple H wants and needs the match on Sunday. And he said it's the most personal fight of Triple H's life. And I'm like, well, wasn't that Undertaker? Just that one, I think that's kind of a match that when they build this one up the way they are, I still think the specter of the last two Undertaker Triple H matches is kind of hanging over their head. And so it doesn't, it kind of comes across as hyperbole. But Heyman said that the honor of WWE is in Triple H's hands. His personal dignity is on the line. And his standing as a man in his own family is on the line when he faces Brock Lesnar. And there were some boos for this. And that's what Heyman wanted because he thanked the fans for their most irrelevant opinion. Great line. And this one I'm going to spend a little more time on. If you're like, I thought you were going to speed through some of this. There's just too much good stuff in here. Heyman said that he wanted he wanted an agreement for Lesnar. What the hell is it? Indemnification. That's what it is. Basically, he shouldn't get in trouble. He can't be sued, basically, for destroying Triple H. An indemnification. I think that's how you pronounce that. Yes, I'm stupid. He said that fans who are looking for a nice wrestling match or two men competing and the better man emerging victorious won't be happy. And he said that it's going to be an uncomfortable beating. He said that Hunter will suffer mercilessly at the hands of Brock Lesnar. You got to love the way Heyman always says Brock Lesnar's name. I mean, when I hear that, it reminds me of the way Gary Hart used to say Abdullah the Butcher. I mean, just good stuff. And Heyman said that not everyone agrees with him, including Shawn Michaels. And he asked Lesnar if HBK is in the building, and Brock said, yes, he is, with a big smile. And Heyman said that if HBK thinks Triple H can beat Lesnar or withstand his beating, he's welcome to come to the ring and say it now. And then Paul says, don't worry, he's not coming out. And he said he doesn't blame Michaels for not coming out because there's no shame in being afraid of Lesnar or realizing that none of your prayers can be answered when you're in the ring with the Beast Incarnate. Thank God, because Brock Lesnar scares the hell out of me, so I feel better knowing that I'm not less of a man because of this. I like that line about the Beast Incarnate because, you know, hey, Sean's been very vocal in his religious beliefs, so nice little play on that without being insulting. And Heyman said that it's well known that everyone from Texas has a yellow streak running up and down their spine. That got, you know, major boos from the crowd. They fell for it. Just good old-fashioned cheap heat. Crowd falls for it. HBK's music hits. Kind of like he fell for it, too. Like, you can go wherever, you know, you can talk about me being a coward and all this, but don't mess with Texas. He got that thing working, I guess, because that's when he came out. It was, everything else Heyman said was, yeah, fine. I'm like trying to picture Sean backstage in the storyline sense, like, yeah, I'll let him say that. I'll let him say, what? He mentioned Texas? You son of a bitch. You can insult me. You can, as a man, you can question my dignity. You can label me a coward, but how dare you ever mess with Texas, USOB. That's what I get out of this. So Sean, like I said, he came out and he got in the ring very slowly. The crowd was very hot for this. They like Charlotte, of course. And he's picking up the mic. And Heyman said, go for it. And then he said, you can sign it regarding the contract. He goes, I'll accept it. And eventually, Triple H's music plays, and he comes out. Hunter and Brock have their big stare-down moment across the table. Hunter's the first one to sign, looking up at Brock, you know, looking up and down the whole time to make sure that he always kept, you know, trying to keep an eye on Brock, basically, so he wasn't going to get cheap-shotted. Brock smiles when Hunter puts the pen to paper. And then Brock steps up, and it's just a contract signing. Like, you know, what the hell's this guy going to do now? And Brock signs his name and throws the contract down. And then Lesnar and Heyman left the ring, and Brock did his little dance bit at ringside. And they backed up the ramp with Lesnar smiling at a very serious Hunter and a concerned-looking Shawn Michaels. What they asked him to do, which was just look like you're fearful of Brock Lesnar, he did a good job. No surprise there. And Hunter was good and intense. I think this would feel, you know, like I said about Undertaker and those matches, had we not seen Silent Hunter for some of their build-up before, I just think this would be like, holy crap, but we've seen it, you know? And I'm not saying this is bad. I really wonder how impactful this would feel if we hadn't seen, you know, a similar thing with Hunter and Taker and all the talk about how bad Hunter wants this match and Shawn saying he's going to win because he's never seen him like this. And I'm like, really? Even when he was wrestling Taker and you said he'd never seen him like that before then either? Then after the break, we got, they played up the, you know, who's going to get the shot at Sheamus at SummerSlam thing for SmackDown in a commercial. And we got a video talking about that as well. And then we had Shawn telling Hunter backstage that, you know, he's been in the ring with him and he's been in the ring with Undertaker and, you know, all the badasses, basically. But Brock Lesnar's different. And he said he's going to be in Hunter's corner, but it's up to Hunter to get the job done. He says, you know where my heart is on this, and he walks away. And then we get a little announcer talk. We got footage of the Punk and Big Show bit. And then Matt Stryker. Thank you to all the people who corrected me on this. Yes, I was corrected. I labeled it as Josh the Stalker Matthews. Trying to keep up from that last angle. Or I just didn't look to notice it was Matt Stryker. But it was Matt Stryker, not Josh the Stalker Matthews, as I wrote in my report. However, as I told some of these people, don't be fooled. I think that may have actually been Josh Matthews, and he is a shapeshifter. I'm not ruling that out. He's a stalker. Maybe I've had this all wrong. Maybe he's not just, you know, stalking people and popping up out of, like, you know, secret hiding spots. Maybe he's like a shape-shifting spirit from some netherworld somewhere that we all need to live in fear of. And I've mocked Mr. Matthews and his hair and everything else for a long time. So I hope that the shapeshifter doesn't appear before me. I'm now more fearful of shapeshifter Matthews than I am even Brock Lesnar. Well, maybe that's not true because Brock, I live in the same state as Brock Lesnar. No, Brock, I know you're not listening to this, but if somebody out there that knows Brock is, no, Brock is still at the top of my list for people I fear most, with a close second being the shapeshifter, Josh Matthews. Then we got the cameras showing that HBK and Paul Heyman car accident bit, and Heyman was like, I'm sorry. And so I think the idea is that Heyman, you know, this happened intentionally, so that, Brock could show up and pull Shawn out of the car and drag him off to, do God knows what to him. His hair was like really wet or something. This would have been a great, in the old days, Shawn would have been a bloody freaking mess. And I thought, you know, you can always you always hear the blood capsule talk for years, like people who didn't even want to believe that, they're not even bleeding. They're using blood capsules. This would have been a great spot for, like, the fake blood that we have actually seen WWE use and, like, you know, when somebody's left in a heat backstage. But they're PG, and they didn't go that route. But anyway, this is what, you know, how it all set up the segment that I described earlier with You know, Sean doing we did have a little more backstage stuff, which Triple H showing up on the scene just late and asking, you know, all the heroes of Superstars got their moment of glory on camera. They were standing around the car. I know Michael McGillicuddy was one of them, and there were others, but AJ was on the scene, and Hunter's like, what happened, guys? What happened? And she told him that, AJ, that is, told him that Brock dragged Sean away. And so that's when Brock walked into the arena with HBK over his shoulders and Heyman walking behind him and gave him the F5. So there's your that's your first Sean bump since he retired? Not sure. But he took the F5, and then that's when we got the whole bit with Brock breaking Shawn Michaels' arm and Heyman going, oh, my God, you broke his arm. Good stuff. I mean, just little things like that that make Paul Heyman such a good mouthpiece, manager, agent type, whatever you want to label him. I guess lawyer type in this case. It really helps. Like, you know, even Paul Heyman is like shocked at the lengths that Brock Lesnar will go to. And, you know, he's out of control. Heyman is so good at conveying that, certainly more so than the announcers are going to, sadly. And so he's been a big part of whatever success this angle has had, I feel, especially on this particular show. And, you know, hey, if the car angle, you know, if the car accident part of it was just too corny for you, I'm not going to try to convince you that you're wrong or anything. I mean, it's personal taste, and I can look past the kind of the silliness of that and Brock backing into the camera and the camera just happening to go dark while he roughed up Shawn Michaels. I can look past that stuff and just look at what happened before that and look at what happened after that and come away pretty satisfied with the final hype that they gave this. Now it feels like, you know, Triple H has a reason to go after Brock Lesnar. He's going for revenge. He's going to try to avenge Shawn Michaels. Because before it was like, what's he mad at him for? He broke his arm, but that happened so long ago that I think the average fan has forgotten. And they just haven't been able to keep that. No matter how many times they show the video, it doesn't feel all that big. You know, it's just like, yeah, all right, that was how long ago? And then for some people, it's like, isn't that the arm that he broke and then raised the same arm at the boxing pay-per-view just a few days later or whatever it was? This is just kind of, it feels fresher. There's a revenge factor there. Even with Stephanie, it was like Heyman was the one tearing her down. And unfortunately, they already showed Heyman getting knocked out by Triple H. I still think that was a mistake. But enough time has passed now where I think if Hunter gets a shot in on Heyman at SummerSlam, the crowd's going to pop pretty big because Heyman's just such an unlikable heel. I mean, he just is. He can get under the skin of those fans as well as anybody. And so I do think it'll mean something again. I just would have really built to that moment the whole time, like just made people just desperately want to get, God, I just want to see Hunter or Sean, somebody get their hands on this worm and just take him out. It's going to be great. And then, I mean, just imagine the pop then. But, you know, like I say, it can still be effective, just maybe not as effective had they been building to that moment all along. But yeah, I think they got this back on track. It feels like more of an event than it did going into the go-home show. You know, the WWE Championship match had some fun, you know, solid hype to it. But I told you my problem with that. It just doesn't feel like the championship is the focus. And I'm more into the championship than I am kind of this slow-moving whatever is going on with CM Punk storyline, the turn or not the turn, whatever this is. And the rest of the show is kind of the rest of the show. So I think they sold some pay-per-views tonight, thanks to Brock and Triple H. Some of it with, you know, what's going to happen, I guess, with Cena and Punk maybe. They did a better job of kind of focusing on those two and putting show to the side. It's still, I mean, shouldn't it feel bigger, though, when you think about it, that, you know, this is we're seeing Cena and Punk in the same match now with the title on the line and in the first time in how long? And you think about those big matches they've had before, this should feel bigger. And I know Big Show being in there in a triple threat does bring it down some, no doubt about it. It's the right move if you think that they should hold off on Punk versus Cena for, you know, later date. I think that's why Show is in there, and so they can hold off on it. But even with Show, and even with it being a triple threat, it just should feel more special that, hey, these guys, you know, yeah, Show might be there, but it's still Punk and Cena. I can't wait to see how that goes. And I don't get the sense that fans at home really are like, just anxious to see, you know, who's going to win the title. That doesn't even feel like it's in play right now because no one's talking about it. I guess we'll find out on SmackDown what they do with the World Heavyweight Championship. We do know that, well, we're going to get Rey Mysterio challenging Miz for the Intercontinental title. And, I guess that's when Miz gets to actually win, is when the title is on the line. Otherwise, he loses. We now know that, obviously Chris Jericho and Dolph Ziggler is on the show. And we have Daniel Bryan and Kane, who is just absent from tonight's show. No Kane whatsoever. And the tag title match now with Kofi Kingston and R-Truth against the Primetime Players. And also the undercard match, the YouTube match, with the U.S. title being on the line with Antonio Cesaro challenging Santino Marella. And I really, really hope Cesaro wins that title. I have high hopes for Cesaro and Oksana as a pairing, and I just think that would be a nice way to, really introduce Cesaro. Hasn't had much, if any, face time on Raw other than in the graphic tonight to the Raw audience. If he has, it's been just kind of, I've forgotten, so it must be pretty forgettable stuff. I think it would be pretty cool if they really, strapped a rocket to this guy. I'm not saying you need to make him world champion, but give him some instant credibility with the U.S. title and a good program with Christian could be a lot of fun. So that's the SummerSlam Go Home show. Of course, Chris Shore and I will both have live coverage of WWE SummerSlam coming up on Sunday night. And we will also preview and offer our early predictions for SummerSlam in Thursdays.net weekly as well. So, again, if you're into audio, we've got a ton of it on the member side. I'm being, I don't want to overstate anything, so I'm going on the low end and by saying you get at least 5 hours of new audio content every week on the .NET member side of things. So check out ProWrestling.net if you just want to follow along with the live coverage on Sunday. On the ad-based version, that's awesome as well. But if you're interested in membership, go to ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up page again. $5.50 if you want to commit to a full year. If you just want to try it out for a month, cool. $7.50 a month. Correspond with the members, have ad-free access to the SummerSlam coverage and all the audio, and have free access all the time over on the .NET member side of things. Thank you for listening, everybody. I'm not sure when I'll be back on the all-access side of things, but I know that obviously you'll get the Saturday show with Jake Barnett and Chris Shore discussing the go-home edition of SmackDown heading into SummerSlam. So at least until then, that's it for .NET all-access audio. And again, check out the PW Torch livecast coming up on Tuesday afternoon, 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern. Free show, and your calls are welcome. Take care, everybody.